Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Lowdown. Today I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by the founder and host of Modern Soccer Coach, Gary Cronin. Gary, big warm welcome to the show.
Connor, thanks for having me. Really, really excited to chat.
About time. It's been in the pipeworks for quite a while. But as you know, Gary, excited to begin the show as we begin with every guest that comes on. Begin by asking, could you please take us through your earliest football memory?
I didn't know actually this was coming. Earliest football memory was probably going to. Actually, no, it wasn't. Wouldn't have been going to game before going to games with my dad. It would have been my dad probably introducing me to football with videos. Again, VHS era, a lot different than what it was today. Came home a few times with, and I ended up collecting them, but I remember getting the first one or two, and one was a Brazil 70 video, which John Fashanu randomly narrated over and talked about, going through game by game in the 1970 World Cup, Pele, Jairzinho, Tostão, etc. And then the other one was George Best. So one was the genius in the team, which was Pele in the Brazil team, and the other one was the complete maverick. And I used to watch, because we didn't have access to so much football, maybe once a week you'd get a sterile match on ITV or something. We didn't have Serie A like they had in our RTE down south, so we would get only British football, and those videos just lit a fuse. Like, just I got so much from and sunny World Cups and all that there, and you're going out to the backyard. So I think that was probably the catalyst for me to develop a passion and love for the game.
It's mad how that form of catalyst basically has changed over time. I always tell people about, obviously, they ask where the Chelsea fandom comes from. And I always reflect back to my dad. My dad, growing up as a 15-year-old in Sligo, the Chelsea Leeds FA Cup final that year went to replay. So instead of watching the one yearly game, we got to see two, right? And you're talking about VHS tapes. I always tell people about watching Zidane in Eurosport years ago, kind of captivated me. But it's amazing now that you basically are in charge of this podcast, this platform that's become, the go-to place for a lot of football aficionados and coaches and people that work and play the game, Modern Soccer Coach. I mean, obviously 2017, 2018 was established. I mean, where did the idea percolate from? Where did it initiate from at all, Gary?
It's a tough one to, because I was thinking this morning. I was like, oh, where did Modern Soccer Coach start? And I wrote a book in 2013 with Benyon Kearney, which was Modern Soccer Coach, came out 2014. And it was just the game was changing and training was changing. I mean, you look at it now and I think it's out, way outdated now. But at the time, the game was probably going through a transition from a coaching standpoint. And then I was starting to do a bit of writing, and I was starting to do a bit of at a website that I just had my own name on it. But I quickly decided that I wanted to kind of do a little bit more. I enjoyed creating football content that was around coaching. Like, I was getting so much of it, and I thought, people might remember it was during a time that the internet was a really positive space, and coaching was a really positive space because it was so new, similar to those videos. Maybe it was the evolution of this was something new where you're getting into, oh wow, you could show a clip of a Jose session or or an exercise that you hadn't seen before, and people would chat about it and people would share. And I kind of jumped on that. When I went into podcasts, I thought I was late to the game. Like, I thought I was in 2017. I thought I enjoy talking to people, and I'm not an extrovert, so it's not that I like going around and chatting to everyone. I really enjoy conversations around a specific topic, and I thought if I could get access to a few people, maybe that would help me be a bit more deliberate about my growth, because I always felt that I was getting better once a year when I went to a convention or a coaching course, because I was around people like that. So I thought, well, if I did it more regularly, maybe I could get better 20 times a year or get a little bit of inspiration. So I did it from a selfish reason, probably from development, and then also from a selfish reason that I enjoyed content. And then it just kind of grew into something that I'm decent at continuing things. Like, I'm decent at sticking to a process, and I've been up and down with it. There was obviously at the start, I loved it. There was an energy from it. And there was at times that I was just doing it to do it every single week and keep it going. And now I'm in a space for probably the last 18 months. I'm like, I genuinely, to the last interview I posted, I genuinely think it's one of my better interviews.
Fantastic. And there's something kind of I explain to people too, being in a similar space, obviously with the podcast, you know, about the creative process. You know, obviously you've written books, as you spoke about, you do the podcast, and we'll talk a little bit more about how your delivery has changed recently, which I'm interested to hear a bit more. But the creative process for me of sitting down to do a podcast, to research, to speak to someone like yourself today, it's an antidote to kind of the go-go nature we're accustomed to in football, right? So how much of it is you intentionally shaping the podcast versus the podcast kind of, you know, shaping you?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. The easy answer is a little bit of both, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's probably the pod, me shaping it to, like, I'm pretty informal about, I don't have a plan. I've never had a plan. I've never spent a dollar on advertising. I've never got to get these guests on. I've had like a little bit of a short list of a dream list, but I always go where my interest goes. So I wouldn't bring on someone to talk about something that I've no interest in, because, and I've had some requests, listen, I'd love to come on, I'd love to discuss this. And I've looked at it and gone, yeah, it's actually a really, really good topic, but I'm not the person that can passionately engage in this here. So maybe that gives me a little bit of quality control over a period of time. Not to say that my interest is what everyone else's interest is, but I think what makes the podcast unique in a way is that I actually care. And you know that you could roll into podcast life and go, hey, listen, without ever meeting you, like, you could say, well, Gary, what are you doing? What's your role? Where were you born, and how did that? So you've been in those kind of contexts where I'm not famous. I don't expect you to do a lot of research, but no one's going to get anything out of this. And I think that's where people want to hear about passionate opinions and thoughts and beliefs. And I enjoy the process of looking for that. So I think whatever I get stimulated by online, and usually it's a different opinion on something. Usually it's someone that has, for example, Andreas Schumacher that I just put out yesterday, like, he reached out with a book and it was 2 versus 1. And I've done 10, 20 podcasts in the last year about how we're moving too much to a possession-based game. So I do not want to read a 2 versus 1 overload book, so you can forget about it. But he sent me a copy of it, and again, said, you know, I get the, it's a nice glossy cover, and it's got, at the back of it, he's got like recommendations on the book from Nagelsmann, Flick, Klinsmann, that this is a great book. So I'm going, oh, for God's sakes, and now I've got to read it. Like, this is way too good. I couldn't put it down. Like, it was genuinely the best football book I've ever read. And it's unbelievable. And it's not about 2 versus 1. It's not about the overload. It's about how 1v1 is redundant without another option. So you need the second option, whether you're going to use it or not. And he goes into the depth in that there. So I guess that if something makes me move and think, I think other people could benefit from that there. Rather than tell us about coaching a 4-3-3, is that going to move people? You know, you can get that on AI today. So I guess that's where the base starts, and then it goes in any direction then.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's something else to be explored. But what's really, really interested me this year with the Modern Soccer Coach podcast has been moving more to this kind of, you know, in-person situ visits. I think, you know, it even adds more to what was going on before, makes it a lot more lifelike, of course. But, you know, sitting down to have a coffee with Rui Faria in Portugal, you know, that's very nostalgic. You know, meeting Lee Grant before he took the Huddersfield job there at Ipswich, you know, meeting, going out to Fiorentina. Where did the inspiration come from there, Gary? Because I think every one of those interviews which I've watched or, you know, listened to countless times now, to be honest, terrific masterpieces, and there's the plan to keep going with those over time.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that first and foremost, because it was another layer of investment to try and, to go and go to those places. It's easy, right? Like you think, well, do you know what? I could get a sponsor to cover the cost of the flight and do all that there. And then you eventually map it out and you realize that sponsors are way harder, So you're like, well, I'm not going to get this covered. Should I go anyway? And that's the conversations, you get a chance to go to Fiorentina to sit down with Mirko. It's kind of a unique opportunity. So I almost, again, took it as a treat. And also, yeah, I think the podcast has to go in person because I start to listen to more in-person stuff. Now, the interesting thing was, like, I'm not a big traveler, and it's also something that in working in football, sometimes you're restricted, especially in an analysis role. Like, you can't leave the zip code basically, where there's games on all the time and scouting reports and all that there. So I was, and then on top of that, COVID. So I didn't do a lot of traveling the last few years. And then I thought I got a bug in it. I just thought this is, there's something in this and going away and seeing an environment and sitting down. But it's really challenged me, like out of my comfort zone to do it in person when you're talking to someone. It's really, because you can't just sit at your in the laptop. You can have the questions right beside you. You can kind of have a backup question or two, but in the podcast in person, I found that it's way more difficult. And the first one I did was Richie Ryan at Cincinnati. So I got a massive shout out to Richie Ryan at Cincinnati. And the Red Bull experience as well, then on top of that there, going there to Mark and Red Bull was, it's really difficult. And I found it, oh my, like my Richie interview was so poor, I thought, from my point of view. Like I could have done a way better job. And I've had interviews that I've got the camera wrong. Even Yanni, like we talked about Yanni before, and Yanni's personality, like I couldn't have got that out of a Zoom. When Yanni's sitting across from me and I'm trying to close the conversation, he's like, stop asking me. Like you've already shut the podcast down. You don't need to do any more. You wouldn't get that on a Zoom, So I enjoy going to places, and there's part of me as well that it challenges me, but also I just think what I want to promote in the podcast is I don't think we've got a big culture in the US about looking next door. I don't think we've got a big culture about, hey, like, why don't you grab a coffee with an MLS next coach? Or why don't you go grab a coffee with a college coach? And why don't you go and watch their training sessions? And I always found that when I was in environments and coaching roles, there wasn't a lot of people that were doing that there. And I think England has a really good culture about CPD and constantly going to, like sharing information. And I think surely now, where information is so accessible, and we were laughing before, like there's no real secrets. So surely now the secret is actually connecting with individuals and creating a community. So I want Modern Soccer Coach to be about, yeah, I see Gary's doing a lot of trips. I should actually probably go to 2 hours down the road and have a chat with someone, because I think I just, again, I'm not an extrovert, so it's not in my nature to promote go and have coffee with 100 people. Like I wouldn't do that personally, but I think if you're in football and you have a desire to do well, go about and like you know the visits you take and people you get access to. People are way more accessible in football than you think they are, but there's also a skepticism of when you reach out to them, and I think you have to prove that there. And I think what I've done is I've proven, not that my podcast is great, but I've proven that there's an authenticity about my intention, which is let us know what you're doing and promote that. And I think I've got through that there, and now I'm trying just to double down on it and say, listen, if we can start a movement where people are a little bit more open, physically, not just Zooms, because again, you can get on there and you can kind of half listen and half watch, and we've been through that. Surely the evolution of our COVID 50 Zooms is to actually you know, invest a bit of time and go somewhere and enjoy an experience and take in a game somewhere. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I think that culture is slowly changing too, Gary. I mean, again, it's funny. I attended the MLS Next Fest last week, or MLS Next Cup, and what people are saying, oh, what are you doing going down to network? I'm like, maybe actually just enjoy watching football and speaking to coaches. So again, it's just changed the connotations around it. But it's interesting how you mentioned authenticity, and it's kind of, that's a long-term game, really, because if you look at the industry you entered in 2017 with the podcast, it's completely different to what it is now, 8 years later. And of course, I mean, we've spoken before about how, you know, the personal development space, it's obviously intertwined with coach education for the purposes of this episode, of course. And, you know, in 2017, it's amazing how you were information scavengers and how you'd manage to develop a podcast amongst that, and it's the go-to thing. Now it's like the platform amongst many, many other platforms. But again, as someone that kind of oversees and sees all these trends from afar, and then obviously with the foresight of being involved in it, I mean, it must be tough now for coaches nowadays. I mean, to get really, really good personal development or coach education to be able to discern amongst everything that they have available.
Yeah, this is a brilliant time. I knew we were going to get here. But before I get stuck into that, I do want to say, I completely agree with you. MLS, and I was messaging you before you went down, and like Fred Lipke and Paul Templeton are doing an unbelievable job at CPD of events and just continually exposed. So I think that's, I'm hoping that's going to help change our culture over here. And I think we've got to get to where development is a process and not an event. And I think that's just volume, right? And accessibility. And I think that's a big, big piece. Now, I think I know where you're coming from with the other stuff, is like, there's so much noise today. So how do you stand out? But and you and I have kind of exchanged messages on this. I see it, I think, a little bit different from you, because I don't see a lot of competition for coaching development. I think there's a lot of noise around content, but actually there's not a lot of football content. And what I mean by that is, I think the game, it's the specific about the game. So if there's a business or if there's a brand that's putting out coaching content, I follow them all. And part of it is just to keep an eye on everything. Part of it is I'm always seeing what content catches. And if the content is a fundamental piece of detail about football, it's typically like does really, really well. So, mm-hmm. For example, I posted something up yesterday on Ramos winning a header from Monterrey the other night, and like he's gone up and he's taken a run and jump and he's not extended his arms. He's held off in his arms until he's above the player, and then he's just holding him. The player has to jump, so it's almost the player's jumping into his arms rather than him holding down the player. And like, I knew that content would do really, really well because it's an appreciation of a football action. And I've posted enough stuff to know that if I post a passing pattern by Bayern Leverkusen, like, yeah, 5 likes, you know, because that's... So I think, I actually think there needs to be more content of football, but I think the problem that you have in the content game is that whenever you enter the game, the terms of agreement are you're entering a content game, and the terms of agreement are it's with marketing people who aren't football people. But if your football is at front and center of what you do, and I'm not saying I get it wrong, a lot of stuff that I post, but I think what my average is way higher is that football is, give me any clip, like go give me a match today. On the next, Palmeiras play at 12 o'clock. Like, you and I could both get 5 clips out of it that people would go, oh my God, such high quality. But people maybe are overlooking it or not appreciate it. And I think there's a group of coaches who, probably about 40% of coaches around that range, are absolutely passionate and crazy about that type of content. And 40% of coaches on the other side are looking for the quick one. Just give me the drill. Just give me the drill. Just give me the drill. And 20% don't care. You know, they're just going to go out and do as is. But I think because the 40% who want the drill are loud, we think that that's what's driving it. And I actually think it's not. I actually think it's the group under the surface that really want the quality stuff. And that's where it's hard to go quality versus content, or quality and volume and et cetera. But I think that's where, if you keep your content high quality, and not in terms of 4D or anything out there, but if you keep the topics high quality, and if you keep the clips and the areas of discussion high quality, you engage a lot of people. There's a big appetite for that.
100%. And then I think it's being able to use that as a consumer of information, use it as a coach, use it as a fan, to be able to go back into your environment. Because again, we can speak and we can harness coach education, for instance, as a topic. But I mean, we spoke off air about the Club World Cup at the moment, and I think that is a really good experiment nowadays in terms of looking at the global ecosystem of football and just realizing how much groupthink there is on one side versus how much thoughtful disagreement there is on the other. Let's say, for instance, I mean, my experience of the Club World Cup so far, going meeting several fan groups of South American teams, I mean, they're here to win it. I mean, spending time in the Chelsea camp last week, as I said, against LAFC, they're not here for a preseason tournament. They're fully adhered to win it. But again, if you consume media from several sources from a certain part of the region or a certain part of the world, it's all negativity. And again, we're not above speaking about, obviously, ticket prices or empty stadiums and stuff like that. But at the same time, it's just amazing. You put two completely different cultures or perspectives of football in a game. Like what we saw the other day, Palmeiras, Porto, Fluminense, Dortmund, Boca, Benfica. Some really, really good stuff to get from those games, Gary.
Unbelievable. But and the big thing for me is the diversity piece. Like, you know, getting different styles, like you said, sometimes with your media sources. And I think we've also got to understand at some stage, you know, people talking about mental health today. And I've said this in a few of our podcasts with guests, like, when are we going to actually look at our habits personally? And, you know, if you're consuming your football as a coach through Instagram alone or through X alone, like, you're going to be, that's your handing over the remote there to, you know, silly stories and noise and clickbait and all that there. And I think you've got to be able to put your head up and see if you're engaged by that diversity, and it might just be a diversity of styles. I think then you go down of, that's the biggest thing for me, watching the Miami. I told you I didn't have an interest in it before, and watching the opening game with the two contrasting styles, and then again, similar to yourself, the desire to win from these players. Now, does it make a great match of the day, or does it make a great Sky Sports news story? Like, probably not. But when you're watching these games and you are seeing a culture clash, and you are seeing the age range is really surprised me, where, again, trying to get a bit of a last-minute homework on teams, I went into the DAZN and did the previews and watched them all of each group. And they're like three players to watch from each team. And like, majority of players are like 38, 39, 40 for these teams. And are not the majority, but there's the stars are really towards the 20 years ago, you would have said that's 5 years past retirement. But these players are, again, you see these players, the nick they're in, the fact that they have a hunger and willing to win, even the fact of how they interact with younger players, like even the Ramos polishing the shoes of the kid that played the ball in. I just think there's something really interesting about, again, we talked about a subscription to Peacock gives you Premier League every week. And your prerogative or mine, whether that's interesting or not. But if you're only watching that there, I find that you're missing out on this little bit of magic in this tournament that I similar to yourself, like the South American teams. I watched Palmeiras under 14s last month in San Diego, and changed so much. I learned, like, every time I watched them play, I learned something tactically that they challenged, you know, like just how they built, what they did, this the type of profile of players they would put in different spaces. Unbelievable. So I think it's exciting. I do think there's too much football on the TV in general, but I think, yeah, this is probably a conflicting discussion points. Yeah, there's too much, but there's also not enough diversity in it, if that makes sense.
It's interesting because I think, like, you know, you're looking at your top 10 percentile here and you're looking at the best of the best, and the one thing they have in common is they do stuff with conviction. You mightn't all the time like it, but you do have to understand and respect it. And, you know, it's funny, I haven't watched a Palmeiras game in years, and then I've watched a Porto game, and I'm like, Abel Ferreira has been playing with these wing backs for years, and he's been playing with these two narrow off tens, like, fantastic, and it's still going. You know, Inzaghi's first game with El Hilal, he's got the wing backs motion, finding opposite side 10 with ease. You know, he's not gone away from the front two at all. And then you can go more into De Zerbi, more into Fabregas. And it's just fantastic to see. And I think for us as fans, as coaches, as consumers of the game, that's what we get pulled into. It's okay, I'm going to sit down and watch Red Bull. I'm going to sit down and watch a PSG. I'm going to sit down and watch one of these Brazilian teams. I know what I'm going to get out from my experience. And I think there's a lot to be said for the uncertainty of football. But then as well, like, it is a low scoring sport, and you can kind of, you're kept on a knife edge with that too. And it's amazing to see two styles confluence. And what's even more of that is you can see the other team iterating off the other team's style as well. And it's just fantastic. For me, this last week, if it's anything to go by the Club World Cup, I think we're in for an exciting few weeks.
Yeah, the conviction that you said there is a conviction for coaches and players, right? Because, again, it probably was targeted with a preseason tournament, and you've seen as many of them as I have. And you probably wouldn't go watch a preseason game somewhere and spend $500 on the whole experience. But when you put a competition together, and now there's a bucket of money to be won in it, which I actually think is genius, by just to spark that competitive edge. But these players, when there's something on the line, I think it just brings out behaviors. And I think that's what we want from football. Like, I actually really enjoy it. I like talking about it, whether we're in a good space at the minute with football as an entertainment, or whether there's too much of it, or whether it's the styles, or whether it's tactically rigid. And I just think we want players to play with an intensity and a passion, and you get that there with, and again, I put my hands up, like, some of these teams from regions that I've never followed are way better than I thought they were. And from going to, and it was in Italy a few months ago, and watched a couple of games, and it's the passion that you feel in the stadium, and it moves you, like, it literally, it impacts you because of its bouncing and it's the noises you haven't heard before. And then you compare it to, you know, there's not a line trying to get a pretzel after 15 minutes, or there's not a halftime show to give out a t-shirt. It's pure football. And I don't, you know, again, I think football and business can go together, but I think it's got to be done in a certain way. And I think, yeah, you're right, ticket prices. And there are some things that I wish, I mean, the referee cam doesn't do anything for me at all. The referee being mic'd up to make the decision after they make the decision, I could do without that. The walkout piece individually, I could do without that there. So there's things that I would like, or hit or miss. But the biggest thing of all is that you are getting an experience when you watch the games, and the noise is insane, isn't it?
It's amazing, honestly. It really was amazing to be, even that, I mean, off the face of the TV, 22,000, 70,000 seats, 70,000 seater stadium's not a good look, but you're at the game. You see the Club Leon fans, you see the LAFC fans, you see the local Atlanta fans, the Chelsea fans. It's a confluence of styles there for sure. But again, we're speaking about football as an art here and as an emotion, and it's amazing how the brain works. So certain moments live with you forever and get stored in the back of your brain, long-term memory. I remember the year 2019, it was at Champions League finals, it was at the playoffs, it was at Copa America, but the one game out of the 60 or 70 odd I attended that year that will forever live in a memory was the Leeds United opening game of the season. They were away to Bristol City, and I've honestly, You can imagine the view I had, Gary, a halfway, just perfect tactical cam view. That day was just like, I get it. I get the Bielsa machine. I just get this so much. It was Bristol City and Leeds. No disrespect, they were playing two different sports that day. And just the confluence of style between the manager, the players, the fans feeding off each other. I was hooked. And, you know, as a Chelsea fan, hand on heart, I travelled up to Leeds six, seven times that season to watch them play. It was absolutely moving experience. And then to see them at home, that's what football is all about. And again, what I get out of player development, out of skill development, out of watching different teams is when you see no doubt, just a conviction and a consistency of approach. I don't know if you've had several experiences like that, but for me, that was just all consuming.
Oh, I love this topic. Yeah, I done. I completely see it because I've done Bielsa and Leeds in 2020, just before COVID. I don't even know who they were playing. Elland Road, Ellis Riley, and his dad got me a ticket, and same thing. Experience, like it wasn't. It was the style of play with, you know, in a stadium that was bang average, really. It was kind of falling down Elland Road, and it was you could every movement you're seeing from a coaching perspective was almost choreographed and collective, and it was beautiful. So that definitely leads to Bielsa. I go back to Brazil. I watched my dad took me to Brazil in 19. No, he didn't take me to Brazil. He took me to Wembley to watch Brazil versus England, 1995, and it was the Umbro Cup. You're probably too young to remember Umbro
Born,
Cup.
just born here.
Yeah, it was. I tell you, I'll rhyme off. R9, Juninho, Middlesbrough, Juninho, Roberto Carlos, Aldair, Dunga, Edmundo, Giovanni, like the Brazilian team. And again, it was the first time I'd seen it. I like it was a year after the World Cup. I really liked the World Cup in '94. Love Brazil videos and all that there. But seeing them in person, and again, accompanied by Samba fans. This was the first time that I'd saw and experienced football to a beat. So they had the drums, and it was the constant drums beating, and they were building and playing in a style that matched the beat to the drums, and it blew my mind, Connor. Like I never had seen the two of them go together and a culture go together with a football style. Now it probably set me back in my development. Probably killed me as a footballer because then I wanted to be a Brazilian and I spent many years messing around with a football when I should have been an Irish midfielder and just get it and give it. But definitely that there, I still think back to that there moment. But and I think like that's where I would want to give my kids an experience of. I think I agree with you. If like football is about experiences. And I think you should constantly look for those experiences. And even there's interviews that for example, the Rui Faria one, where I was there an hour early with a coffee and my notes, and I was genuinely excited about this chat because this is someone that has influenced. So, like, I think experiences doesn't have to come with coaching a game and winning. Experiences can come with, you know, going. I never thought I would go to a country by myself and go to a match by myself. And now, like it, I don't even blink at it. I probably like every other week. I think, where can I go to take something in? And I think coaches today, because maybe by consumption habits or maybe just society, but I think we've gone away from chasing those experiences, and now we're chasing information. And the problem with the difference of the two is that information can be received on a laptop or on a phone. So you're so reliant on chasing that you're not actually getting the in-person experience, or you're not actually going somewhere. And yeah, that would be my takeaway is like all the things you said there, someone could listen and say, oh, it must be nice for you, Connor, to be going to those big games and 2018, 2019, but it's actually way cheaper to go to a place than it is to continually spend dinners and doing all the things you do domestically, you know, like it's just a matter of priorities.
Yeah, I think it's a fine balance though between being, you know, authentic, you know, being full of conviction for what you like, but being also open-minded to seek different perspectives. And it'd be remiss of us not to touch upon the youth development piece, because you've mentioned the Palmeiras U14s, which it's amazing, even after all your years of watching a game, playing a game, coaching, you're looking at the same problem now with a completely different lens, watching how they play and dominate. I'd like to counter that then with the Phil Foden post you put up the other day, which I'd like you to speak more to, because you're speaking about him playing U14s, U15s at City, smallest kid on the field, you're throwing him into the middle of the field. Then you're like, well, really, is it now? Are we producing players according to a game model? Is it the environment that shapes the player? Is it a little bit of both? Like, for me, that's an interesting kind of dynamic to kind of solve and equate.
Yeah, it's tough. And part of it is, like, I was really small as a kid, and I was technically really good, in my opinion. But I lacked, I mean, to stop and start the conversation of could I have made it as a professional? No, I wasn't quick enough. Like, I think you need speed to be a professional player, and I was relatively slow, but I could handle a ball and I could manipulate a ball. But I was always found in Ireland that I had to play left wing, left back, right back, because the middle of the pit, the center of the pitch was just mud. And you know what that looks like. And also it's full of, you know, because of the nature of the game, it's going direct, second ball. So they need bigger people in there. So it's sometimes, you know, I feel as if we wouldn't, by culturally, it's very different for an Irish team to put someone in there. So that's why it stood out for me. But I think, would I then play a small number 10 like I did Foden? And I think the challenge where I would, if I sat down with a coach and said, would you be comfortable doing it, would be, like, unfortunately, can the player deal? You can't take a player who doesn't maybe specialize and it's like, all right, they're small, so this is doing what we said they're going to do. No, they have to be able to have a certain level of skill to be able to live in those spaces. Otherwise, you're probably doing the player a disservice. And that's what I thought was really interesting of the Palmeiras model, was that they wouldn't play the free man. Like, all this concept of find the free player. Well, the free player is usually the fullback who's being jumped on when they get the ball by the winger to press, and they've a sideline. So the fullback's hung out to dry, and they wouldn't play the pass into a trap. They continually just were looking for either a diagonal or even a straight ball, change the angle into those inside channels. And they would play eights, tens, 11s, sevens, with players flying. But their ability to solve, to spin this way, spin that way, combine. Like, and then you go back and say, oh, it must be nice being Brazil. You probably get that at birth. But then I was chatting to a few of the coaches and futsal, because you see that influence pretty quickly of, you know, the role in the ball and the strength work of holding off and waiting. And you're like, all right, well, they must be in the gym then. And no, they don't do any gym work till they're 16, 17. And you start thinking about, all right, well, the solutions tactically are suddenly multiplied by a technical base that, again, going back to two different models, Ireland and Brazil, like, you're not getting the futsal, you're not getting the contact, you're not getting those spaces. So I think would Foden, I guess the question is, like, does the coach have to move to the player and sacrifice tactically? No, I don't think they do, but I think every club should have a model of how they want. If under 12, under 14, 16, they want players to thrive in those spaces, then stop doing 1v1s where you're facing opponents all the time, because that's not what those spaces are about. And that's something that, even going off on a rant here, even when you look at the tournament, who's the Flamengo? Gerson from Flamengo.
Yeah.
And there's a clip where he's getting right and left and they're jumping on him and he's spinning this way and spinning that way. And I think that's unique. And Foden's the only one that it kind of looks that's in that player profile for the UK, rather than, yeah, there's not a lot of players that are able to do that there. And I wonder if that's culturally something that's holding us back, or if it's been held back by the constraints of society, kind of with climate.
It is an interesting one, because, again, you look at the demographic or the ecology here in the States in terms of different regions, locations. I speak with people about this all the time. You look at the tri-state, the Midwest, produce a certain battle-hardened player. Then you look at the amount of sunny days a year you can have in Florida, Texas, California. It's going to produce a really, really specific style of player too. But for me, it's just amazing if you look at systems as well. It's interesting how one small change to the system, i.e., if someone started playing like Palmeiras, for instance, in the morning MLS next, well, then, okay, opponents have to get a little bit better. They have to adapt. Maybe they take stuff on board. And then you feed the organism, you give it a little bit more feedback. And then that way, it again works itself. Again, it was interesting, the Zerbi coming to the Premier League at the time, but that set in stone. And then it became a lot more culturally appropriate to play a bit more like the Zerbi's teams. And then teams started iterating, teams started solving. So again, I think it's. Again, you could look at Guardiola being a trailblazer for the last decade or so in English football, and you can see bad imitations of it and good imitations of it. But that's what maybe all that it takes, someone just to step into it.
Oh, some apps 100% agree, but I think it's being also comfortable with taking a chance of, again, what Bielsa is that phrase about, mad, what is it, genius or is it madman until it works kind of thing. And
Right, yeah.
I think in our culture over here, we're not willing to be a madman, we're not willing to be an idiot. We're because again, society or the premium we place on knowledge. And I think that hurts us, like everyone's got to be the smartest person in the room. And I think that's how we look at education, is just get the information. If I can get the information, I've got it, I'm good to go. But that's not it. The information is required, yes. But also, what makes for me Bielsa, Conte, Guardiola, Sarri, De Zerbi special is the fact that they like to do it at that stage with a risk and look like an idiot in front of the world. And then you compare that and bring it down and said, well, would you be interested in looking like an idiot in front of five people who are at the game? And oh yeah, that's no problem. But then why do? And I think that's where coaching is if I my negative about coaching at the minute, it's kind of stuck in a way that I think that we're trying to solve. It's not about, a 4-3-3 can solve a 4-4-2 by A, B, and C. There you go. One. You're good. Like, oh, no. Now you're because you, what you said, like a trend in one way will actually create a counter trend in the other. So now I think the counter trend is in the pressing systems are now so triggered and man-to-man oriented. So now they are going off cues that kids didn't know 10 years ago. So now teams that can unbalance that with a bit of rotation or a narrow base or a unorthodox shape at the back, that's where they're even at the level of the club cup, like that works. That can get them into the final third sometimes because you're solving it and you've got someone who can carry the ball 60 yards at speed. And I think if we could go back and we look at the youth landscape and player development landscape. And the one thing I would challenge would be is that are we following rules to a game that we're actually making up now ourselves? Meaning, and I've done it, like what I've done so many modern soccer coach breakdowns on how this solves that, how that solves that. But now I think, yeah, but if you don't, that's not a rule. Can you disrupt that thinking and say, all right, if we had a coach on one of the serve calls and he was talking about a dynamic base and he was having. He just had showed three different slides, two centre backs on one on the same side as the goalkeeper, everyone on the same side, the back four, back three with this, and you're looking at it going like, yeah, if you did that on a Saturday morning, you would bamboozle. It would take a team 2 weeks to get their pressing strategies from that. But now you go back and say, yeah, but how many teams build with the goalkeeper passing to the centre back and the centre back either passing to the full back near side or panicking and going big. So I think where football's struggling with like this bill that we're talking about, why it's not working, also that when you go to De Zerbi's level, it's the change in rhythm from a defender that's willing to put his foot on the ball, bring pressure, break pressure, boom, boom, boom. And then, and for an 8-year-old to solve that with pass to the goalkeeper, wait to pressure come, like an 8-year-old isn't going to have that bank of experience or knowledge to be able to do that. So they're going to deal with it in different situations. So to come back to it, I think if you're a coach that's curious about, do you know what? This is different, but I actually think it's going to give them a problem. And actually, I'm going to try and solve it. But I think it's low-bearing fruit, right? Take the drill from this, take the exercise from that, take the shape from that, and go out and do it. And it doesn't work. And I think that's where the tension can lead to coach and players is sometimes on a sideline on a Saturday morning at a game that there is nothing at stake, the coach feels pressure because what they worked on during the week isn't working. And it's not working because the players aren't good enough. It's working because the opponents see it every single week. So they're just canceling each other out at a level that canceling each other out sounds like Wednesday night at the San Siro with two teams, but canceling each other out is youth soccer every Saturday morning. 4-2-3-1 versus 4-2-3-1. They know how to solve it and they don't know how to build anything different. So the coach is obviously emotionally reacting to it because they're under a bit of pressure. And I just think if we did open ourselves up to a little bit more failure short term, we could unlock coaching to be an art later on. And it feels like that would release the pressure on the information as well that we're sought after. Because sometimes with the information, the coaches are saying, yeah, I know that already.
Yeah, I think we're in a real interesting space at the moment. I don't think player profiles are necessarily redundant. I think they can be limiting. What's really, really interesting and intriguing for me to see in the next few years is how staff profiles will evolve because, again, you look at, the speed and the rate of rapid change in terms of technology, the advent of AI, arguably will once sought after skill sets become a lot more redundant in terms of coaching. So, in terms of having to manage these huge swathes of data, across departments, managing up, managing down, Gary, I'm really interested. Again, no pun intended. You look at what a modern soccer coach is nowadays. How does that evolve in these next few years?
Yeah, I go back and forth. I don't obviously don't know the answer to it, but it's a brilliant question. And like yourself, I'm fascinated by it. I go back and forth quite a bit because sometimes I meet people and I talk to people and they've just got it, Connor. Like you've probably done the same. Like they've got a level of charisma or spark to them that they could walk into a grocery store and get everyone on board to whatever processes they needed to do. And there's part of me that thinks that's actually going to. Like I really respect that, and I've worked for one or two people that have a bit of that. And I'm like, oh, if I had had that, God, I would have been such a better coach. And I think that value is going to double up—a little bit of charisma, the ability to manage people, because we are becoming more tech reliant as we're getting exposed to it. But then also, there's no doubt that you have to be able to manage the data, and you have to be able to manage the volume of different departments. I go back and forth whether you need to be a specialist or you need to be able to leverage your position around an organization and be a bit more strategic on, listen, Rui Faria said it, it's like you don't have to control the process. You have to make sure you don't lose control. And I thought that's really, like, again, sounds great, but wow, there's so much depth to that because I think if you're a manager today at an elite level, you can't lose control of the process. But I think because of the amount of dynamics, there's a real temptation to control everything. And I think controlling everything puts you in a situation where, yeah, like you're almost set up for failure because then you're gonna deplete time and insights that you probably specialize in. So I guess I think you need to know a lot about every single thing, but I think then you need to have the art of going, you know what? I need hiring, I think, is going to be really, really important. And it used to be that that's where I think, again, go not to go off a tangent, but I think coaching, if I'm looking at a coach today who maybe doesn't want to be a top manager, but maybe wants to work an environment, I'm looking at what problems I could solve for a coach. Like if I was 22 today, I'd go into, I'd double up on AI and analysis. And I'd be hireable in 3 years Because I'll save you 6 hours a week, 7 hours a week. But I think coaches today, the problem with it is that they don't really know what that's going to look like in 10 years. So it's, unfortunately, I think a lot of people are trying to be the same version, and there's not a lot of head coaching jobs out there, you know? So I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it does. And I think it's an ongoing kind of conversation. And again, as you know, you give the organism more feedback, it'll give you more feedback, and things will iterate and develop over time. And it's interesting to kind of, obviously, I mean, you remain a really big force amongst coaches all over the world with the platform. And obviously, it's a huge, huge and key part of our coaching culture, I would say. But again, you've made changes to the platform over the past year. Again, going forward, if we're looking at the Mariana Trench, beginning to look a bit more into the unknown, Gary, where do you think, what do you think some of the trends would be looking into? What are some of the conversations? What are some of the rabbit holes you want to go down next?
Yeah, great question. And it allows me to plug some stuff as well. So
yeah.
I've basically created like an insider, modern soccer coach insider. Oh, hold on 1 second.
Go for it.
Which is to create a little bit more, formalize all the webinars, all the content, allow coaches to get it on demand, but et cetera, more resources, bonus content, blah, blah, blah. But also what I want to do is more community chats with coaches, and try to do more like, let's jump on calls and solve problems. And then my passion project alongside that is to start a kind of break the rules committee, where we do look at concepts around build up and say, all right, well, why does, again, going back to Palmeiras, why does your six have to be a two touch player when the Palmeiras, if you're a really good team and you're shifting a team right to left and you're opening up spaces, your six probably needs to attract players and be able to drive and spin and do all that there. So profiles of players, these truths, challenging some of those and actually getting coaches to be actionable with it. So rather than, like, again, we had Jacob Pickles on and he gave a lot of response to that there about coaches that I should be doing some of this, I should be doing some of that. But I want to create a bit of support around people who are willing to take a bit of risk in their environment. And I think support for that, for me, would be jumping on every couple of weeks with a group of people that are like-minded to do that there. So that's what I really want to do with, alongside me work in youth development. I want to try and help. I think people think that at the top level, it's played like a chess game. But I think with my experience in analysis, you can be way more disruptive at the youth level, and way more, and so much variation at the youth level could actually help. You're not preparing them to press in a 4-3-3 at 8 years of age. If you miss that step out, it's probably going to help the player, you know? So I think I'm in a position with my background in analysis that I can hopefully show youth coaches that it's not this game tactical. They don't have to, it's not a vessel you fill up of tactical knowledge that they run out at 18 and go and deliver it. The more flexible they are in their viewpoints, the better the players are going to be. But you've got to be flexible to start with. And I think that's easy to say it and easy to challenge a coach. But I think I have a duty as well and a responsibility to support coaches in that there. So that's what I want to do.
Fantastic. And look, as we begin to bring the podcast to a close, obviously, look, I really enjoyed the Gary. I think obviously we have a wide range of curiosities and interests, so it could have gone either way, but I'm happy to see the direction in which it's gone. You know, for those people listening that are even that slightly bit inspired by your own journey, what would be the one bit of advice you'd have for them?
A bit of advice, always look to learn. And my advice to coaches, when coaches drop me a message, get as much information, do your courses, do formal, informal education, opportunities, develop, and get on the grass and work. And it might, don't look for that perfect job, get experience, and that will build you, if you're doing both right, it will build relationships and credibility. Like, football's a village, you know, you and I, if there's a person that I want to call and contact, like, there's 1 degree of separation between most people in football. So when someone calls about you, get the little things right, have an enthusiasm, have a personality, be respectful, be on time, like all those little things, get them right. I would say respect's the biggest thing. Like, don't, it's really, really hard to have a career in football as a player or a coach or administrator or anything. Don't make it any harder by fighting with anyone. Don't resist the urge to think that the world's against you. It's the world is against you, just in probability terms, but it's not against you. And it's just so many people trying to get through the door. So I think don't take that personally. Don't fight with people. You know, naturally tensions will exist, but just keep yourself in a good space, be positive, and typically action and meeting people and talking about people, action delivers something at the end of it. I really believe that.
Of course. Absolutely fantastic. Well, Gary, I hope this is a part one. I hope we get you on for part two in the future, but hope you enjoyed recording this one as much as me.
Brilliant. No, you're coming on mine next, so it's all good. We'll continue it.
Fantastic.